Some key injuries have hit the association over the past few days. What impact will that have on teams that are jockeying for postseason positioning? The trade deadline for the NHL is tomorrow, and plenty of contenders have been wheeling and dealing to set themselves up for a deep playoff run, including the Florida Panthers, who are primed to get back to a Stanley Cup final. What is happening with the Red Sox as one of their offseason pitching acquisitions is done for the year? Is Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery on their radar? And we're less than a week away from the NFL's new season as teams are cutting players before free agency commences. Back to close out the week with another fun-filled, fast-paced podcast. It's all coming up, but first, this message. J-Reels here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular, just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reels podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reels as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels Podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, directed, in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, Michael people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. We're getting there, people. Still in the muck of this sports dead zone, I'll have a few tidbits to share as we approach the Ides of March, as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first-timers, welcome aboard. And for those who have been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Monday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And yes, we're still going through it. Once we get to a week from this coming Sunday, 10 more days where it will be St. Patrick's Day, but it will also be Selection Sunday, and we could start to look at the tournament. We could get that much closer to baseball. And right at this very moment, am I grasping for straws when it comes to what's happening in sports? Not necessarily, but who knows how long this may be. It could be 40 minutes, it could be 50. But we'll crank one out to close out another week here. And I have to start off with the association. Not that there's a lot going on there. Can we talk about the Celtics the other day? I'll spare that for later on. With that brutal loss in Cleveland without Donovan Mitchell having a 22-point lead. And I'm about to unpack that. But what's happened here over the last 72 hours is that there's been a ton of injuries in the NBA and some that could actually impact teams that are looking to get themselves set for a postseason where we're still more than a month away before the season concludes. Some teams have 18 games, anywhere between 18 to 20 left, depending on who you are. But for the Lakers, do I have to start there? I get it. LeBron's dealing with his ankle injury. He left the game, went into the locker room in a loss last night. And we've talked about the Lakers. I get it. They're a lightning rod for any type of discussion when it comes to the league. And you know how I feel about these regurgitated narratives. But if the Lakers are planning to get back to a conference final similar to what they did last year, if they're not going to have King James, the all-time leading scorer, we get it, the whole kit and caboodle when it comes to number 23 in purple and gold, the Lakers may not be long for a postseason, which will doom the NBA in that regard, because without him, you're going to lose a big piece to that puzzle, hoping that the suits and the powers that be in the NBA with the Lakers, that whole market, of course, Anthony Davis to the Robin of LeBron's Batman, that's going to be a situation where the league will choke on their filet mignon. But for Other teams that are also hurting at this very moment, Karl Anthony Towns, the top seeded as of right now, tied with the Oklahoma City Thunder. He's going to be out. He's dealing with an ankle, I believe. In fact, it's a knee, so he's going to miss the game against Indiana. Who knows how severe it's going to be? I'm sure it's day-to-day. But when we look at the big picture, how this is going to be as we get to the end of the regular season and how this could impact the T-Wolves, who are looking to see if they could make some noise and get deep into a postseason, which they haven't seen in 20 years. Now, think about it. The last time they had any type of success in the playoffs was the 2003-2004 season when they had Kevin Garnett, Latrell Sprewell, and Sam Cassell, where they went to a Western Conference final before losing to the Lakers. And for the T-Wolves, their fans, my guy Head Style in Minneapolis, I'm sure, even cautiously optimistic, they're hoping that it's nothing too severe, as the Timberwolves have had a big year and they certainly want to continue that into the postseason. So that's one player we'll have to keep an eye on. Also, Evan Mobley of the Cavaliers, he's going to be out a week with an ankle sprain. And this is a guy who's young, part of that mix there with the other guys in the front line, whether your name is Jared Allen. We know about the backcourt with Darius Garland and, of course, Donovan Mitchell, who did not play the other night in that game against the Celtics. So do I have to bring that up again? But he's another guy that you're going to have to keep in mind here down the stretch of this season, because Cleveland, as I've said before and I'll say it again, I would think that they want to get a 2 seed to keep themselves ahead of the Bucks in not only the division but in the seeding, just so they could possibly have at least the first 2 rounds home court advantage for a Cavalier team that has not had any success since LeBron left to LA. And even though they did make it to the play-in a couple of years ago, but they bowed out of that, losing in those 2 games. I believe they lost to Brooklyn in one of those games, and then the other one was to the Hawks. So I'm sure, and of course last year, I get it, they lost to the Knicks in the first round, as we know. But I would think that based on how they performed here, especially over the last couple of months, they got off to that, 18-15 start, and I'm thinking to myself, hey, I may get that under number at 50.5, and then they went on a stretch where they just tore up the league. I get it against a lot of bad teams, but now they put themselves in a position where they're just, a half game behind the Bucks for second place in the East. So that's also going to be an injury that they may have to do their best to try to get him back on the court. And again, when you're dealing with these lower leg injuries, whether it's knees or ankles, even with the young players, and I get it, this isn't the 90s or early 2000s where players are going to play 82 games. These guys are going to have their load management. They're going to preserve themselves to get to April, May, and even possibly June. And could I see that being any different here with the Cavaliers or even with the Timberwolves for that matter? Chances are probably not, because they're looking at the big picture as opposed to trying to get what's happening in the short term, even with the Cavaliers trying to look for a 2 seed to get those first 2 series with the home court. And then you have Victor Wembanyama, a guy who will probably win the Rookie of the Year, has had his moments this year. Hasn't been a lot of big time other rookies that have, I don't want to say, are going to end up being better than Victor Wembanyama when it's all said and done. But this is his year to lose the NBA Rookie of the Year. And he's done enough. You would think that Wembanyama, when it's all said and done, is going to end up winning the Rookie of the Year. And for him to be out with an ankle injury, he's not going to play tonight against Sacramento. And we know that the Spurs are the worst team out West. So we would think that it's going to be a scenario where they're probably going to treat him with kid gloves. I think the experience is going to help him. Why put him on the shelf when he's going to these visiting arenas? I'm sure that the audience is going to want to see this guy. And I get it, he still has his whole NBA career ahead of him. But you wonder if Greg Popovich is going to put him on ice, or is going to, considering that they're already going nowhere and he is the main attraction to that team, will he put him on the shelf for the rest of the year? Maybe a little bit too early to say. But that's one thing with Popovich. He is the godfather of load management. And who knows if the injury could be severe or could be serious for that matter. Is it a situation where he may think to, I'm not going to risk this kid's future by having this nagging injury, which could blow up to be more than what it is. Who knows with Popovich? That's one thing that are people going to pay attention to only because the Spurs are out of the playoff mix and nobody really cares what's happening in San Antonio outside of that region when it comes to their basketball team. Probably not, but still, I would not be surprised if Wembanyama is going to be in and out of the lineup, or let's say this is going to be an injury he's going to nurse longer than just a night or a week or a couple of weeks, where they may shut him down when it's all said and done. So that's something to also just put at the back of your mental Rolodex when it comes to these injuries. And then you also had a scenario where Bismack Biyombo, Oklahoma City Thunder, I get it to a much lesser degree, unlike the Evan Mobleys, LeBrons, Karl Anthony Towns, etc. But here's a guy who collapsed standing in front of the Thunder bench last night and then had to go into the locker room. It was thought to be serious at first. Anytime you see a player, whether it's the 12th man or obviously a star player, go down like that. But for all indications is that he just fainted. There isn't anything that's serious or anything that's alarming to where Biyombo's health is going to be compromised from a standpoint of, let's say, the heart or anything severe when it comes to his vital organs. So that's something that, thankfully, the NBA as well as the Thunder could take a deep breath. Biyombo, who's been in the league for a long time, role player, plays defense, hard-nosed type of player. And for him to have that type of scenario where it could be frightening. Now, I didn't get to see the video. I did read that this morning. But like I mentioned, based on what I've read, it looks like he's going to be okay. It isn't anything serious. He's going to be hospitalized for any significant amount of time. So that's good news there. Besides that, I got nothing else. I'm not going to get into that Celtic game. I said I would unpack it. They're going to Denver tonight, which is going to be an interesting test for them before going to Phoenix over the weekend. They have the Sunday 3:30 game on ABC. But for the Celtics, I know I've talked about this, and I'm not trying to belabor this point, but you have to wonder whether or not, when you look at the post game there in that 105-104 loss to the Cavaliers, where Jaylen Brown came out and said that there's something off there with their mental approach, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the mentality, they don't have that closeout mentality, they don't have that, we put the foot on their proverbial necks, but they weren't able to seal the deal. They had a 22-point lead in the fourth quarter with a team that did not have Donovan Mitchell, and what happens? They let a guy, not Dwayne Wade, Dean Wade, outscore the Celtics in that fourth quarter, 20-17, en route to that one-point victory. And even though Jason Tatum got the foul there, but it was overturned as he was not touched there when he took that jumper and had a shot to get two free throws at the end of the game. But that's just a terrible loss. And that's the one thing that will worry if you're a Celtic fan. Just the closeout, the overall focus of this team down the stretch, where it's crazy. They have closers. Obviously, Jason Tatum, if you even want to give the ball to Jaylen Brown there in the closing seconds of a game. And they have the ability, they have the talent, etc. And they're a good front-running team where they'll blow teams out. And yes, they could have all these double-digit leads and just run away and run teams out of the gym. But for whatever the reason, in these clutch moments, in the final moments of a game where, for whatever reason, they're erratic, or they try to scramble around to make sure that they are in good shape. And even though they fought and tried to thwart that Cavalier comeback, but for whatever reason, they just do not seem to be on the same page as far as playing together, playing cohesive, making sure they get those stops. And when you have a guy, like I said, no offense to Dean Wade, but come on. I mean, seriously, you're going to have this guy just all of a sudden have a fourth quarter to where he was, what, I believe, 5-for-5 from 3, 7-for-7 from the field. And they didn't realize that maybe after the third 3, come on, let's get in this guy's face. He's in that hot zone to where he's just draining buckets. The rim looks like the size of the Atlantic Ocean, and he keeps making shots. And maybe we could look at the coach, Joe Mazzulla, as him not telling his guys, come on, can we get a hand in this guy's face or trail this guy or whatever it may be? So that's the one thing, I'll just leave it there when it comes to the Celtics. So they have an interesting week with the couple of big matchups there out west. And it's funny, now that I look at this, when I talk about injuries, and the reason why I didn't bring him up, as I have to reel it in a second, Ben Simmons done for the rest of the year with a back issue. No shock there. Now, if you're a Net fan, the one thing that you're going to hope and bank on is that he has one more year left on his contract, $40.5 million. If by any chance he comes into training camp, clean bill of health, close to if not 100%, and hopefully plays well at the start of next season to about where the trading deadline is in February, you have an expiring contract where you could bring back some assets. You're not going to bring back a ton unless he just plays out of his mind. And who knows, considering he's going into a final year of a contract and he's what, 26 years old, maybe 27 tops. And if he wants to get that last big payday, if he wants to get, let's say, a 4-year, he's not going to get a mega max contract because he's not going to make any All-NBA teams, etc. But if he's going to get, let's say, a 4 for $100 or $110, he's going to have to play and sing for a supper. And if he comes in with that type of focus, and obviously the health is enormous, who knows, Net fans, you may be able to fetch something in return for a guy who's absolutely done nothing when they brought him in and shipped James Harden to Philadelphia. So that's one thing, or one injury that I missed there when I talked about these block of injuries in the NBA. And besides that, I know Orlando has played well. And think about this. A week ago, Orlando was 8th in the Eastern Conference. Where do they stack now? They're currently 4th. So if the season ended today, New York, the Knicks that is, would go to Orlando in the first round and would have home court advantage. And they were 8th, where they would have to go to Miami to play the first play-in game if the season ended a week ago. But as we know, the season doesn't end until the middle of April. So good job by the Magic as they creep up the standings in the Eastern Conference and see where they will land when it's all said and done. And then the Sixers, even though with a good win in Dallas on Sunday, they've dropped all the way to 7th. And Joel Embiid, who did say that even if the team is going to be floundering, and from a standpoint of where they're at right now, 7th in the Eastern Conference, that he's still going to come back. He's not going to want to take any more games off, or days off for that matter. And that's good for Embiid. I'm sure that he has a lot of incentive to get back out there, maybe for an MVP. I believe he's missed, I know there's that 17-game threshold where you have to play at least 65 games. And if he's thinking about an MVP, who knows? Maybe he's going to want to try to squeeze that in if he hasn't fallen under that 65-game limit in order to get any postseason awards, especially when it comes to All-NBA or MVP as he won last year. So that is one where we'll take a look at with the Sixers, who have really fallen off the face of the earth. And when you don't have your best player, of course, that's going to be the case. Other than that, the rest of the conference is the same. And then when we look out west, we talked about Minnesota with Karl Anthony Towns tied with the Thunder, same record, and the Nuggets are just a game back. And the rest of the conference is the same as we saw the other day. Clippers, New Orleans, Phoenix, who got back in the win column there. Sacramento, Dallas, Golden State, and then the Lakers round out your top 10. Utah is 5.5 back, so you can forget about it. The West is pretty much a wrap. Same with the East. So you're not going to have a lot of drama down the stretch of the season. And even with the Hawks, that they beat the Knicks there the other night at the Garden. And we know the Knicks have been hurting. And then the Hawks even won last night after staying in New York for almost a week. They beat the Rockets down in the ATL. So the Hawks have putting themselves in a position where they're trying to stretch their lead over the Brooklyn Nets. And not that the Nets are going to be any threat. But with the Nets beating the Hawks while they were in town last week, those two games, last Thursday and Saturday, maybe they would be a minor threat. But as it is right now, they're currently, what, 3.5 games back? 3 back of the Hawks for the final spot. And not a lot of drama in the NBA. With the playoff races, with the 7-10 bracket in each of those conferences, that's what I have there with the association as we move forward. College basketball, pretty much the same. Relatively quiet, status quo, not a lot has happened. I know UConn beat Marquette last night at Marquette, so that pretty much, they wrapped up the Big East as it was, so no shock there. But UConn, as they try to get themselves primed for the Big East tournament, which will be next week, and then obviously to defend their national championship of last year. So for Danny Hurley and the Huskies, they're primed to get back-to-back this year, and I think they're going to be one of the favorites, but we'll talk about that more, not this coming Monday, the following Monday, once the brackets and everybody's in place as far as the tournament goes. And I've gotten a lot of flack from people on my YouTube channel, at J Reels, with the whole Caitlin Clark issue, and I had people coming at me saying that Clark is a better player than Maravich, and what do I have against Caitlin Clark? And I have nothing against her, or nothing against their play. And you can't compare Maravich to Clark. It's two separate players. And Clark is probably the better player overall, despite the fact that Maravich was a carnival act. He was a showman. A lot of flair with his passing, his deep shooting, etc. But for those who are getting at me, and I appreciate all the comments, and it's great, and this is the reason why I do what I do, posting these shorts on my channel or even having this podcast. But people got to pipe down to think that I have something against Caitlin Clark or women's college basketball, as a couple of other people have gotten at me about players of the past, the Pearl Moores of the world. And I was like, wait a minute, time out. I got nothing against Caitlin Clark. More power and kudos to her, as I've said on my podcast and on my channel. But all I'm saying is that there's an asterisk, and if you haven't watched or didn't listen to the podcast the other day, I have a snippet of it on my YouTube channel, so you'll check it out. But I just love the banter back and forth, and I'm thankful that it's been respectful, too, on top of that. So I got to give kudos to the people who have responded. So I just wanted to put that out there in reference to college basketball. But besides that, we're just waiting to get to Selection Sunday at this point, unless you have anything major that's going to happen between now and then. And we would think that there's going to be a lot to take place if a team that is a dark horse or a Cinderella, I should say, that's going to run through a tournament and get themselves in the tournament, whether they're St. John's that right now is on the bubble, can they have some magic with their head coach Rick Pitino after what he said a couple weeks ago regarding his players? That remains to be seen. So you know I'll have my finger on the pulse when it comes to that as we inch closer to not only the conference tournaments next week, but obviously March Madness, which will begin. I get it. It's the Tuesday after, so it'll be, what, the 19th? But for all intents and purposes, the tournament will begin 2 weeks from today. All right, now let me lace up my skates and get to the National Hockey League, as a lot of wheeling and dealing has been taking place because the trade deadline tomorrow, I believe it's 3 p.m., could be 4. I know they flip-flop from year to year, but I'll say 3 p.m. as of right this second. And the Florida Panthers, I want to start with them only because they're the team that right this very second, they are torrid. They have played just phenomenally here over the last really few months. And it got off to a slow start, maybe a little Stanley Cup hangover after losing to the Golden Knights last year in 5 games. But they are on a stretch where they're currently 3 points ahead of the Boston Bruins in the Atlantic, and obviously have the one seed as of this very moment because the Rangers, who have lost a couple of games here, and Florida beat the Rangers Monday night at the Garden with a couple of goals there by Sam Reinhart, 2 goals in the third period, and then they also beat the Devils in New Jersey on Tuesday night. So they go back home tonight to play the Bruins, I believe. Let me just double check that. No, they actually, the Bruins play the Maple Leafs tonight. The Flyers come to Sunrise to play the Panthers, and for what Florida has done here, and they've also added Vladimir Tarasenko from the Ottawa Senators, and if you recall last year, the longtime St. Louis Blue who won a Stanley Cup with St. Louis back in the 2019 season was traded at the deadline or right before the deadline to the Rangers to add that extra offensive punch, and as we know, they weren't able to get out of the first round. He signs a 1-year deal with Ottawa, and now he gets shipped for 2 picks to the Panthers to add another layer of offense to go with the Sam Reinharts of the world, to the Carter Verghese's, obviously the Matthew Tkachuks. And for the Panthers, they mean business, and they are going all in. I'm sure they looked at last year, having that magical run as an 8 seed, getting to a cup final, beating the Boston Bruins, who are the best regular season team in the history of the sport along the way, and to bring in Tarasenko, who has 17 goals this year, 41 points in 59 games. All right, it's just another guy to go along with the aforementioned players on that team. I'd even mention Alexander Barkov as well. But you have to feel good if you're a Panther fan. I know there's just a handful outside of the South Florida area. And they are going, like I said, mean business, going all in. And they're going to be a big-time threat here come April. Now, watch this be a situation similar to 2 years ago where I believe they were the, maybe it was Colorado, but the, and I got to look that up, the team with the best record 2 years ago in the sport or had the most points, I believe it was the Florida Panthers, and we know that they lost in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs to the Tampa Bay Lightning. So you have to wonder whether or not, is this team peaking right now at this very moment, most wins, most points in the sport, and they have 19 games to go. Now, they've been on a roll here. They have won 6 in a row, 9 of 10, and their streak even goes deeper than that. But you have to like what you see there if you're a Panther fan. And just keep in mind that for all that they've done this year, and I believe they have the most points in the sport. Let me double check because Vancouver, 87. Yes. So can Florida continue to keep this? You would think that there's going to be a bit of a lull as you get to the end of the season. And you don't want to have that lull to the extent where you get into the postseason and then you start off flat. Now, I understand I'm looking into my crystal ball here. Obviously, a lot could happen with injuries and who knows what could take place here over the course of the next month or so. But if you're a hockey fan or even just a sports fan and you follow teams that have gotten off to with a slow starts and now they're getting toward the finish line of a season where they've just been red hot, can they peter out to a point where they have to now start the engine again? And I get it. If you're a professional hockey player or just an athlete, and if you can't get up for big games or the playoffs or whatever, then you're in the wrong profession. But sometimes when teams have these type of runs in a regular season, especially as you get into March and maybe even into April, and then the flame kind of flickers a little bit, or maybe it goes out altogether. And the most recent point, you could talk about the Panthers 2 years ago, although they won a round, all right, fine, but the Bruins of last year. And I get it, it was a historic year for them, and they had a 3-1 series lead, and they spit the bit. So, not to make this a cautionary tale for the Panthers, or thinking that this is all going to fizzle out when it's all said and done, but they are playing great, and you have to give them a lot of kudos, because they have really turned on the Jets here to show that they're a team that is looking to get back to a Stanley Cup final and winning one for the first time in their franchise's history. So we'll certainly pay attention to that. As far as the other trades that have been made, especially with the big teams, I know the Avalanche have made quite a few trades here to see if they can get back and win a cup final as they did 2 years ago. And for the Avalanche, they were able to get Anthony Mantha from the Capitals as well as Casey Mittelstadt from Buffalo, a forward, Sean Walker, a defenseman from Philadelphia. So they were able to get three players, and who knows if they're done. You would think if you're going to bring in three guys like that to your team, I would think they're going to be done. But unless they could maybe pull another rabbit out of the hat to bring in another key contributor or acquisition to their team to see if they could have another deep playoff run in them, I'm sure they're going to do that. Then you also had the Edmonton Oilers make a big move with the Anaheim Mighty Ducks, bringing in Adam Henrique as well as Sam Carrick, two guys that know their way, especially Henrique, who went to a cup final many years ago with the Devils. But for Edmonton, as we know, and I've talked about it time after time with them, with their talent and with their perennial MVP and their sniper aside him with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, they need to get to a Stanley Cup final. And a lot of that has to do with legacy when it comes to McDavid, a guy who's a generational player, as I've extolled his just wonderful play over the last couple of years. But good for them to get those type of guys, and who knows if they're going to be done making trades. So we'll keep an eye on that. The Rangers also picked up Alex Wenberg from Seattle, which will make up for the loss of Philip Hedl, who was done early on this season. And then just recently, within the last few weeks, Blake Wheeler, as they're both going to be out and not suit up for the Rangers the rest of the year. So Wenberg is a guy who's going to replace both of those guys and see what he could do, as Seattle had their own playoff run last year as they got to a Game 7 in a conference semifinal. I understand that's not a big thing when it's all said and done, but at least Wenberg knows his way around the playoffs, as detailed by what the Kraken did last spring. And then you also have the Golden Knights themselves looking to defend their Stanley Cup championship, bringing in Noah Hanifin, a guy who is a very good defenseman. And for Vegas, who has slipped here a little bit over the last couple of weeks with Vancouver and even Edmonton zooming past them in the Pacific Division, bringing him into the mix, who is a unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. But let's see if they could catch lightning in a bottle. A guy who was drafted by Carolina, started his career there before being traded to Calgary, and a guy that could certainly bolster their back line. So great pickup by Vegas. And you have to wonder what's going to happen over the course of the next 24 hours plus, as the trade deadline on the horizon, teams trying to get those players, whether it's a guy like Tarasenko who's won a cup, or guys that have that experience in the locker room who could lead a team to a Stanley Cup final. This is why we love sports, follow sports, etc. But with that being said, let's see what's going to happen here as we get to tomorrow afternoon. And I'll keep everybody updated on my YouTube channel to see if there are going to be any big deals. If there's small deals along the way, I may not talk about those. But we've seen the Rangers. We've seen Colorado. We've seen Edmonton. We've seen Vegas, Florida. These are the teams that are going to be in the mix for a cup final. And who knows what Boston's going to do when it's all said and done. Is Carolina going to make a move here? Maybe Winnipeg, Dallas. Those are teams that don't want to get left out, considering the other teams that are going to be battling it out, whether in the conference or even in the division for that matter, have already made some moves. So for those aforementioned teams who have been quiet, what's going to happen? Winnipeg, Dallas, Carolina, Boston, etc. It's your move and you got a little bit more than 24 hours to do so. So you know I will be all over that. As far as the league, nothing much has gone on since then. I know the Islanders have won 4 in a row. Am I going to get crazy about that right this very moment? Let's get to some wild card, because I know I talked about that last Monday. But since then, I haven't really gotten into the whole wild card mix. And I did say that once we get to 60 games, I was going to unpack that. So in the East, we know about Florida, Boston, etc., yada, yada. Toronto is currently in third place. They have the top three seeds in that division. And then for the Metropolitan, you have the Rangers, Hurricanes, and Flyers. Now, the Islanders, they are 4 points behind the Flyers for the third spot in the Metropolitan. So you want to keep that in mind. And the Islanders are currently 4 points behind Tampa for the second wild card in the East. The Red Wings, they're also tied with Tampa for the 1 and 2 seeds in the wild card. And with the Islanders 4 points behind, Washington 7 points behind. And I'll even throw Pittsburgh and Jersey because they are 8 points behind. Am I going to talk about Buffalo? 9 points. I guess we can go down the list. But we would think that with Washington, Pittsburgh, New Jersey, that will be the final line of defense when it comes to the teams on the outside looking in. And the Islanders are trying to make a little bit of a run here. Let's see what they're going to do. Are they going to make any trades? I doubt it. There were even rumors about maybe even selling a guy like Brock Nelson, which I don't think they're going to do, and which would be stupid to do if they're going to go ahead and start selling instead of buying. Maybe they're not going to buy as much. They're probably going to get a small piece here or there, but that we'll have to see what Lou Lamoriello is going to do, the VP of Hockey Ops there for the Islanders. And then in the West, Dallas is now leapfrogged over the Winnipeg Jets. They currently have a 2-point lead over the Jets and Avalanche, who also have 83 points. Then you have in the Pacific, Vancouver, 9-point lead over Edmonton, and then follow that by LA, who is 5 points behind the Oilers in the Pacific. Vegas currently has the top wild card spot, also tied with the Nashville Predators at 73 points. And then there is some separation there where St. Louis, Seattle, 6 points behind them, both with 67 points. And then you have Calgary, 65. You want to go Minnesota, 64. And after that, it's a big drop off because then you have Arizona, San Jose, and Chicago, which they are already out to sea. And which one of these teams are they going to make some deals? Now, Calgary, of course, they traded Noah Hanifin. And even though they are currently, 8 points behind the final playoff spot, do they have a run in them? Probably not. Maybe the Blues, who are in town, they lost to the Islanders there on Tuesday night. They play the Devils tonight before the Rangers on Saturday. So let's see if they're going to have any type of run in them to inch closer to the wild card spots there in the West. But that pretty much wraps up your NHL. Let's see what teams are going to be in the mix over the next day or so. And you know, I'll recap that not only on Monday's podcast, but also stay tuned to my YouTube channel for any of the latest when it comes to the trade deadline in the National Hockey League. Now let me turn my attention. Do I do baseball or football? Ah, what the hell? Let's get in the batter's box because baseball now is 3 weeks from today, raising the curtain for the 2024 MLB season. Looking forward to it. Still not geared up. I don't know if it's because maybe the Mets and their expectations. I don't know. But I'm looking forward to baseball. As we know, spring and April, the month of the best sports month, as I've talked about time after time. But here's what we have. If you're my cousin and former radio partner, JD, and Red Sox Nation there in the New England area, I'm sure you are, I don't want to say chomping at the bit, but I'm sure that you're tight-lipped, maybe to the point where you know whatever it is that the fans are going to say is going to fall on deaf ears when it comes to ownership, because the Red Sox, their big offseason acquisition was Lucas Giolito, formerly of the Chicago White Sox, and prior to that, the Washington Nationals, to where they signed him to a two-year, what was it? I even forgot. $40, $50 million deal. Come to find out that he has a partial tear of his UCL, and in all likelihood is going to have surgery. Now, I don't believe it's official as of yet, but because of that, and their starting pitching is thin to begin with. Remember, they traded Chris Sale to Atlanta, and who's going to, they might as well have me start in their rotation as a fifth starter. But now you have to wonder, the Red Sox brass, what are they going to do here if you're Craig Breslow, the new GM, and we know the owners, the John Henrys and Tom Werners of the world, who, I get it, their focus is on the Fenway Sports Group as well as making money for the PGA, as they were part of a group to put $3 billion towards the Pro Golfers Association. And then on top of that, they have whatever soccer team that they're a part of overseas in the Premier League or who knows what league, UEFA, I don't even know. But you would think that even with the four championships in their back pocket this century, and even winning one as early as 6 years ago. Now, 6 years might as well be an eternity, even with the success of the Red Sox here in the 21st century. But are they even going to flirt with the possibility of bringing in Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery to their team? And for Scott Boras, who I got on his case the other day, I get it. He could talk about, oh, I have four or five teams that have called in on my clients. All right, well, we don't care if you have 20 teams calling in on your clients. Just get a deal signed because it's already March the 7th and none of these guys are in camp. But I'll put that aside for the moment because this is about the Red Sox ownership. And I understand that Craig Breslow, his hands are tied here because he's going to do what the ownership is going to tell him to do. And even if Breslow says, hey, maybe we can get one of these guys on a two-year deal, opt out after 1 year, etc., just to at least show our fan base that we have a pulse, that we want to at least attempt to win, even in a loaded division with the Orioles, the Yankees, Blue Jays, etc. And you have to wonder, what has gone on with this ownership group here over the last few years where they let Mookie Betts, well, they traded him. And funny enough, Alex Verdugo, he gets traded to the Yankees. And that, not to say that Verdugo was a big-time player. We know he's a useful player. But they pretty much had to forcefully, from the fans, had to sign Rafael Devers, and I'm sure if they could get out of that contract yesterday, they would. But this organization for so long and having the success over the last 20-some-odd years, or really now 20 years, when you think back to 2004, this is going to be the 20th anniversary of that Red Sox team that finally broke the curse of the Bambino. But now, it's almost as if this team is in purgatory. But it's because it's self-inflicted. They're not looking to bring in big contracts. They're not looking to bring in big-time players. They're not looking to do this. Now watch, as I say this, they'll sign Snell to a two-year deal the minute I press the stop button on my recorder here. What is happening? What is going on up there? And I'm sure there are a ton of other Red Sox fans, including my beloved cousin JD, that are wondering and thinking the same thing. So who knows? We'll see what's going to happen there. There hasn't been any indication that these guys are going to sign, and that's Snell and Montgomery, those two guys, with anybody, despite the fact of what Scott Boras says. So we'll wait and see on that. And if you're the Yankees, I know you got to be sick of Carlos Rodon. Speaking of bad contracts, 6 years, $162 million. He didn't start until July. He had an ERA almost 7 last year. And here it is. Yesterday, he gets bombed, bookended by two home runs. First pitch of the game, I believe it was Yandy Diaz, takes him deep to right center and then closes his outing with another home run. And the nerve of manager Aaron Boone, when asked how he felt about Rodon's appearance there yesterday, he said, well, other than the first pitch and the last batter he faced, I thought he pitched pretty well. Seriously, Aaron Boone, you are fooling no one with those comments. You're certainly not fooling the Yankee fan. In fact, you're actually insulting their intelligence, but they've had to deal with this over the last few years. Because we know Aaron Boone, he's going to break out the pom-poms for his players, and I understand he's not going to throw them under the bus. I get it. But can we have a bit of a more honest assessment of what you saw there on the mound with Rodon, who is a big-time free agent, paid him big bucks, and he's absolutely done zilch in his year-plus stint with the Yankees. And I get it. He's been hurt. He can't pitch if he's going to be on the sidelines. But for the time that he had pitched last year and what we've seen so far, where his fastball is not at 95, it's at 93. And if that's going to be the case, Rodon's going to have to pitch like Jamie Moyer, throw slop up there and try to deceive the batters as opposed to overpower them. And not to say he was Randy Johnson, not to confuse him with the Hall of Famer, but geez, when does it stop when it comes to coddling his players or giving just a pie-in-the-sky assessment of, oh, I thought he did well, despite the fact that he gave up two bombs and his velocity on the fastball has dipped. Then you have Sonny Gray, former Yankee, may miss opening day for the Cardinals as he's dealing with injuries. And Ronald Acuna Jr., I know the Brave fan, they could breathe a sigh of relief. His knee is sound and looks like he's going to ramp up his baseball activities in the days to come if he hasn't done so already. All I read was that he's fine, he's going to do well, and there isn't anything alarming or anything that we could really take a look at to say, oh, geez, he could be starting the season on the IL or this could be lingering or just ongoing. So kudos to the Braves fans as they'll have their MVP back in tow, you would think, in a matter of days. And then you had a couple of retirements. Josh Donaldson retired after 13 years and an MVP in Toronto. Had a very good career, but certainly faded at the very end, whether it was in Minnesota, then obviously last year with the Yankees, last couple of years for that matter. So Donaldson goes off into the sunset after a 13-year career. And after 11 seasons, Mike Zunino, I get it, this is on a lesser degree, but longtime catcher, Rays, Mariners, also for the Guardians at the tail end. Good catcher, had good pop. He also says goodbye to the sport. So both of those guys, onto their next chapter. All the best to those two. And then lastly, as I put on my helmet and shoulder pads for the NFL, we're less than a week away from the new season. No, not the schedule, of course, but for free agency and for player movement, you're going to see a lot of that. And what we've seen here over the early part of this first week is cuts. Whether your name is Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs in Seattle, Tre'Davious White, Jordan Poyer in Buffalo. We saw what happened early last week or even a couple weeks ago with Xavier Howard and Emmanuel Ogbah down in Miami. And that's amongst many others. Mason Cole, the center for Pittsburgh. We could go through all of the players that have been let go, cap casualties, as they ramp themselves up and get ready for a free agent frenzy here, which will start this coming Wednesday. And the big name that was cut early this week was Russell Wilson, to no one's surprise. And the Broncos are going to have to face an $85 cap hit to start off, which would have been the first year of Russell Wilson's contract in Denver, if you can believe that. Where Russell Wilson will land, I talked about this on my YouTube channel a couple days ago. I don't know. There are a couple of fits. I don't want him in Pittsburgh. I'm sorry. What we saw in his last year in Seattle and these 2 years in the Mahi City, and I get it, the first year in Nathaniel Hackett, maybe you throw that aside, but with Sean Payton and the offensive mastermind that he is, and he had a better year under Payton than he had under Hackett, but he is 35, he's not getting any better, his scrambling isn't as good as it once was, dating back to his halcyon days in the Pacific Northwest with the Seahawks, so I would stay away. If I'm the Steelers, maybe he could go to Atlanta, which would be a big boost for them considering they have pieces in place there with that offense. That would be a fit for him. Other places, who knows? Atlanta is the first team that comes to mind. If I had to take a 30,000-foot view of other teams that are looking for quarterbacks, you're going to make me go through all the teams here. But right now, I can't say that there is a team that he could really go to. And he's not going to go to Carolina. He's not going to go to New Orleans with Derek Carr there. He may go to Tampa. I believe Baker Mayfield is a free agent, even though I know that the Buccaneer front office, as they brought back Mike Evans, I'm sure maybe they'll try to work out a deal to bring Mayfield back. Who knows? Atlanta's the first team that comes to mind. And let's see where Russell Wilson's going to go on the next stop of his NFL journey. You also had Jason Kelce, no shock there, a tearful goodbye as he retires from the Philadelphia Eagles, 13 seasons, I believe, six all NFL first team all pros, which that's going to get him into the Hall of Fame on roller skates. And Kelce, we understand the career he had and toward the end there, making it to a Super Bowl last year. Obviously, the successful podcast that he has with his brother Travis. And now I'm sure he's going to concentrate on that full time. And the NFL loses a big player. And I get it that Kelce in Philadelphia, he's going to be well received and revered down in the city of brotherly love. But for the NFL fan outside of southeastern Pennsylvania, who has gotten a chance to see Kelce on a big stage and perform at a high level, and then now, just this past year, saying goodbye and seeing him in the luxury suite with his shirt off, drinking beer, Taylor Swift, etc., he's going to be much more of a personality now, you would think, and good for him. All the credit, all the kudos on a great career. I'm sure he's going to end up wearing a gold jacket when it's all said and done, so congratulations to you, my guy. Just a great player for so many years, and you would think, when his time is up 5 years from now, the Hall of Fame will come calling. And as we get into next week, let's see what's going to happen here with the free agency. I couldn't tell you right now. I'm not really in football mode. I'll pick that up more so next week, especially once we get to next Thursday, because with free agency and that window opening, it's going to be just wall-to-wall acquisitions, and I'm sure you may get a trade or two along the way, so that we'll have to wait and see. But yes, the NFL curtain, when it comes to transactions for that matter, acquisitions, trades, more so signings than anything, will be coming down the pike as the NFL fan. I'm sure they're going to be salivating and waiting to see who's going to be new destination, new addresses as we get the NFL season ratcheted up. Now what? 7 weeks away from the NFL draft, and I know everybody's going to be anticipating for that. And then one last thing, can I just throw this in here? And I guess I have to only because it has made some news and it's been on my radar. But Jake Paul, and I've talked about him sparingly in the past, I read that on July 20th, he is going to fight Mike Tyson in an exhibition, which is going to be streamed on Netflix, July 20th at Jerry's World, AT&T Stadium, Arlington, Texas. And I read that this morning. How do I feel about that? I really don't know. I know Jake Paul has had these exhibitions, and now they're looking at this as probably going to be the biggest fight in history. That, I could say this right off the bat. If Jake Paul is going to come out and say, or his representatives, or even in a statement, that this could be the biggest fight in boxing history, have you heard of Ali Frazier? Can we just start there? I mean, seriously? And I get it. This is 2024. That was 1971. And in fact, the anniversary of that is tomorrow. The first Ali Frazier fight, March 8th, 1971. Think about that. 53 years ago. Tomorrow's that fight. So how apropos it is for me to bring up Jake Paul, Mike Tyson as the biggest fight in boxing history when, as we all know, that was probably not only the biggest fight, may have been the biggest event, sporting event of the 20th century. And that's not a stretch. But I'll digress from that. As far as Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, they could hype this up to be whatever they want it to be. And will I even watch? I can't say I will. I haven't watched any of his other fights, whether it was against Nate Robinson when he knocked him out. Remember that? And the irony of that is that was the undercard on the Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. exhibition that night. And even then, I couldn't even tell you who won. I believe Tyson did win, but at the end of the day, does anybody care? And we've seen these type of fights before. And I would have to think that even just of recent memory, that the Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather fight was probably, at least in this century, maybe the biggest when it comes to pay-per-view. I'm not going to say box office. And who knows if this is going to be in Jerry's World, which is going to seat 100,000 people. And I understand it's very ambitious for these two guys who, when it's all said and done, it's about the money. Let's face it, people. Because it's not as if Jake Paul, is he going to make it into the boxing realm where he's going to fight against other fighters in his class when it comes to the WBA, WBC, or IBF for that matter? I don't know. I couldn't even tell you right now because I'm not following that. Full transparency here. But for this to be an event and for this to hype it up as the best or the biggest boxing event ever, and what are they going to say? Oh, well, we're just hoping that people watch. Of course, they're not going to shortchange their own right or their own selves and to not get the hype machine going here in March to set themselves up for a big payday come the latter part of July. But for them to compare this to Ali Frazier, Hagler Hearns, go ahead, please. Do I need to even go down the list of all the great fights over the years? Tyson Holyfield, you name it. And I haven't even scratched the surface going back to Joe Louis, Max Schmeling, and please. So I'll just leave that right there when it comes to the fight. I just thought to bring that up just because. And we'll see when we get to July if there's going to be any attention, any type of focus or pomp and circumstance, you name it. But I know it's a tough way to end this podcast, but yeah, I just thought to bring that up just to for grins and giggles. That'll do it, my good people. Another episode just about in the books. Thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you so much for carving out a few precious moments out of your day to listen to what it is I have to say about what goes on in the world of sports. If you haven't done so, like I mentioned at the top, please subscribe, rate, review. Go to my YouTube channel, at JReels. Come on, people. Let's get that subscribership up. And the reason why I say that is because if you didn't watch my vlog a couple of weeks ago, I'm growing my hair out until I get to 1,000 subscribers. And I'm inching closer to 300, so I still have a long way to go to get there. So please, tell your family, friends, foes, frenemies, etc. to tune in, subscribe, leave a like, comment, etc. as well as whatever podcast platform you listen to, Apple, Spotify, jreels.com, etc. If you want to hit me up with a question, comment, suggestion, on YouTube at jreels, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the jreels podcast, Twitter, X, jreels, one, just the number, or the old-fashioned way, the jreelspodcast at gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals, because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. It's in the blood. It's in the DNA, as I like to say. I'm not going anywhere as long as I'm alive and breathing, talking sports. Pretty much since day one out of the womb. One more time, as I've said before, full-time content creator. Your contribution, your participation is vital to my success. And I appreciate those, whether you've been one of my day ones or this is your first day. Because I will continue to deliver the fire, passion, fury, energy with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, praise, analysis, feelings on anything and everything that happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, the JReels podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. From the South Bronx, the South Beach, the South Central, the South Pacific, and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless everybody. And until next time on the JReels podcast, on the flip, baby.